We'll be discussing this morning a verse from Canto 3, chapter 29. The chapter is entitled Explanation of Devotional Service. And those of you who have your little handheld devices, the text number is 35. 32935. For those of you that may not be familiar with the context, this is Lord Kapiladeva, incarnation, avatar, specifically Yuga avatar. What does Yuga avatar mean? You know what avatar means? No? Avatar means one who descends. Avatar. One who descends. So there's the spiritual realm, and then there's this place. It's not a spiritual realm. Cars flip over and snowstorms come and all kinds of things happen. So, from the spiritual realm, from time to time, the personality of Godhead descends. Or, He empowers a living entity to act fully with all of his potencies on his behalf. That's avatar. And yuga avatar means there's the category of avatar that teaches the process of achieving perfection of life during a particular yuga. You know what yuga means? Like this is Kali Yuga. Yuga means age or period of time, yeah? Kali Yuga. When Kapiladeva appeared, it was Satya Yuga. So during each of the four yugas, there's a primary means of deliverance. And in Satya Yuga, what is that? Anyone? Satya Yuga. Meditation, right? Meditation. Or dhyan, like chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. Dhyan yoga, meditation. Dhyan, that term, is part of the eightfold yoga system. We're going to hear about this in the purport, that's why I'm mentioning it now. Eightfold yoga system. Ashtanga yoga. Ashta, anga. Eight limbs. Eightfold yoga system. And one of them is dhyan. Dhyan, Dharana, Samadhi, those are the last three. And then, I'm mentioning this because it's in the purport, some of the earlier ones, well, the first two generally, when people teach yoga, they just like skip over. And that's the do's and the don'ts. Yama and Niyama. The do's means standards or principles or values that you should live your life by. No, elevation of character and elevation of consciousness and elevation of conduct. Do's and do nots. Things that will just spoil the purpose of life. Like elevation to Krishna consciousness. Do nots. Yama and Niyama. Yama and Niyama, do and do not. Just keeping it simple. And then comes the yoga class, asanas. And sometimes even pranayama. So that's the first four. Pranayama is prana. You've heard that term before? Prana. Life air, prana. So, controlling the life air, disciplining. It's a life of discipline. Others may also live a life of discipline. Yesterday evening, I won't say too much about it, but I mean to disclose the person, but I met somebody last night that's number 10 in the world in a professional sport, competitive professional sport. That's their livelihood. Number 10, ranked number 10 in the world. You know, I didn't say it, but I was thinking, you live a life of discipline. To be number 10 in the world in anything, you have to live a life of discipline. The life of discipline, it's related to the purport. A life of discipline towards what end? Anything in this world, there has to be discipline. Say it opposite. Without discipline, you're not going to achieve anything in this world. You can't control your mind and senses. You're not going to achieve anything except a mess. So material or spiritual must be disciplined, control of the mind and senses. So the pranayama is meant for controlling the mind. You know, that monster that beats us up all the time, even when we're trying to chant the Maha Mantra or do anything. You know, do our service nicely, the mind gets in the way. So pranayama is a way of, by understanding the principles of the material forces that balance or make imbalance, the subtle imbalance of the mind can be disciplined to the point, it's mechanical, it's not devotional yet, but by discipline, by drilling the life airs, that's how Prabhupada describes it, drilling the life airs, drilling, you're like a drill sergeant, up, two, three, four, drill, 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 and then there's discipline. And then it's meant to make the mind more peaceful, less agitating and agitated, you know, within ourselves and in our dealings with material nature and others. And then comes the next one, number five. That's before you do the last three, you know, dhyana, dharana, samadhi. So number five is, what's number five? Pranayama, pratyahara, pratyahara. Pratyahara is like what Bhishma Dev did, if you're familiar with Canto 1, Chapter 9, when he saw that the sun started to move in the northerly direction, it was Makara. And so he did the pratyahara program. He knew how to do it and he did it. He was very effective in the Ashtanga Yoga system. He was a devotee, but even as a devotee, he knew how to do that, and he did that. He withdrew his senses, but it's not like, you know, his arms went into his body. He, you know, there's a subtle sense, and he withdrew. When you do service, or you do even material activity, you have to extend, you know, the sense of sight, the sense of hearing, and the sense of our senses. You extend your senses into the field of the material energy. Not like your eyes pop out, but the seeing propensity goes out into the energy, and the hearing propensity, and tasting, smelling, touching, and then the mind. So pratyahara is you withdraw that, the subtle sense. Towards what end? Fixing the mind on, you know, transcendence depends on what your conception of transcendence is. It may be a Brahman conception, it may be a Paramatma conception, it may be a Bhagavan conception. Because those are all in the realm of transcendence. And if you're Mayavadi or a practicing, an aspiring impersonalist, you try to meditate on Brahman. If you're Buddhist, you meditate on the void. That's not easy. As we find in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, Krishna says that's not easy for those who are embodied. Most of us are embodied. It's not easy. How do you fix your mind on something that has no qualities, no form, no personality, no activities? How do you fix your mind on that? It's very difficult. You know, being more blunt, it's not going to happen. So, fix your mind on Paramatma. In the purport, it describes the fixing the mind on Paramatma. And addresses Paramatma. The yogis, those practitioners of yoga that aren't yet devotees, they fix their mind on Paramatma. And then you can fix your mind on the personal feature of the Supreme Lord. So this verse that we're going to read, I'll get to it in a bit, is Kapila Deva's teaching that he's the Yuga Avatar. Yuga Avatar. Attention. Yuga Avatar means? One who descends, Avatar, during this or a particular age to deliver the means of achieving perfection. That's Yuga Avatar. Kapila Deva's Yuga Avatar for Satya Yuga, I'm repeating now, where the process of meditation, but meditation is the means of achieving perfection. Meditation upon what? Kapila Deva's teaching meditation on Bhagavan. He's a devotee, or he's teaching devotional service through the medium of meditation. There's a connection, and this verse is describing it. This leads to that. There's so many other things. There's Gyan, like previous chapters. Sankhya, detailed stuff about matter. And then the purpose of all that is detachment by understanding we don't belong to that category, we belong to the category of spirit. That's Sankhya. That's where the train is going when you get on that train and do it properly. We belong to the category of spirit. And the conclusion of that whole chapter, 26, is then it's meant for the spirit, the individual spark of spirit, to meditate upon the Supreme Spirit, to fix consciousness upon the Supreme Spirit. So then the meditation process then leads to exclusive devotional service. And this is the chapter of explanation of devotional service. So that's really where the train is going, not just this stop and that stop. It's going to the destination. Just stay on board. You get to the destination. So there is a connection by design. There's a connection between the systems of yoga and the topmost yoga. Like a ladder leads to the top rung of the ladder. We're very familiar with that metaphor because it's a Bhagavad Gita metaphor, the yoga ladder. Probably most of you are familiar with this little section from the last verse of chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatein antaratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam same yukta utama mataha. Mataha means, in my opinion, when Krishna's opinion, he's just being very polite, and his opinion is fact. This is the way it is. This is my opinion. The fact is, the uttama of all the systems of yoga, they're all leading to something. And that's the uttama form of yoga. And the uttama form of yoga is madgatein antaratmana. Antar atmana. Madgatein antaratmana. Your consciousness is fixed on Krishna. Mud, on me. With consciousness fixed upon me, shradhavan, with faith, possessing faith, shradhavan, bhajate yomam, engage in devotional service. And devotional service means not pratyahara, where you withdraw the senses, but you extend the senses in service to Krishna. No service to Krishna, withdraw the senses. Service to Krishna, service. These senses are extended. You know, that's the do and the don't button. On and off button. You know, the yes and no, do this and don't do that button is service to Krishna, yes. It's not related to the service to Krishna? It's no. And very simple, a life of simplicity. When there's fidelity unto Krishna in one's relationship with Krishna, out of love, I don't do something. If it's not pleasing to Krishna, if it's pleasing to Krishna, I'm ready. Even if I may, you know, I may not particularly like that something, but so then that's sense control and mind control. It's necessary. Then dhyana, dharana, samadhi, absorption. So in the purport of that verse from Bhagavad Gita, there's a little paragraph, very important one, where Prabhupada explains all of the systems of yoga must have some mix, some portion of bhakti. Otherwise it doesn't qualify to even be called yoga. Should I say it again? Is it clear? There must be some mix of bhakti. Otherwise, gyan is just study. But gyan yoga is where the goal is to connect with Krishna. The goal of that gyan is to connect with Krishna. If Krishna isn't in the picture, connecting with Krishna isn't in the picture, it doesn't qualify to be called gyan yoga. Or, as in the purport, if there's meditation, this is satya yoga, the process of achieving spiritual perfection is meditation. If there isn't meditation upon Krishna, you can't call it dhyan yoga or ashtanga yoga or hatha yoga. It's a misnomer. It's hatha or dhyan or, you know, some process of meditation. That's not yoga. Clear? And because that when that principle of yoga is there, what happens? You contact Krishna, what happens? It may be gradual. It may be lifetimes. It may be, you know, moments. Whatever the time duration, the principle of contact with the Supreme Pure makes one pure. And what's the contamination that needs purification? Well, the root is our turning of our attention away from Krishna. Bahir Mukha Jeev in Jiva Goswami's language from his Sandarbhas. Bahir Mukha Jeev. Bahir, like Bahir Nishingo Hridaye Nishingo. Bahir means outside. We turn our attention away. Mukha means face. Turn our attention away from Krishna. And from that root comes all contamination. Very colorful varieties of contamination. And we each have our special favorite variety of contamination that we are attached to and struggle with and suffer from, and we continue doing it anyways. Because it remains. Even you can, you know, come along like a weed, a dandelion. It's a visual image for me from when I was growing up. I would mow the lawn, house where we grew up, and you know, dandelion. So it doesn't work. You just mow the lawn, and you know, that yellow thing, and the leaves around it get mowed over, but the root's there. So boop, there comes another dandelion. You know, just grows. Same with our contamination. It just, you know, you can't just clip it at the top. Prarabdha karma is this technical terminology. Reactions due to our past misdeeds that are fructifying now, it is not just like, you know, neutralize them. The root is still there. It's going to come back again and come back again. And then the seeds will proliferate and you get more dandelions. You have to pull the root. So how do you pull the root of contamination? Turn your attention to Krishna. So we have the process, devotional service, and starting with the chanting of the holy name. But when we're chanting the holy name, there gradually at least, there must be the intention of being present with Krishna, in our relationship with Krishna, not just performing the activity and letting the contamination temporarily be cut down. You know, we're safe while we're chanting because we're not going to do something untoward or embarrassing. But if the intention is not there, it must grow. Bhakti is meant to nourish bhakti. So that's our meditation. We do dhyan, dharana, samadhi. At least we practice it through the Maha Mantra chanting. And the essence of that is our attention goes to Krishna. And then there's inattention while chanting. And that's not so good. It's an offense. We should avoid it by being attentive. Two other things. I'm going to read the verse in purport. Kapila Deva is an incarnation. Yuga avatar. He's representing in Satya Yuga the means of achieving spiritual perfection. He's teaching it to his mother so that we can understand it. Like Krishna's teaching Arjuna, so that we can understand. Same, this, the personalities change, but the principle doesn't change. So, what is it that he wants to give to his mother? It's what his mother wants to receive, that he wants to give, what she wants to receive. In summary, you know, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the message of Bhagavat Dharma is both the means and the end. It's not just philosophy. I'm going to go over here for a bit and we'll come back. In Western perspective, there's a Greek term, philosophia. And philosophia means, you know, a love for knowledge. That's the literal meaning of, you know, so when people say, you know, the philosophy. And in contrast, I like this particular point. In contrast, the Vedic perspective is called darshan. And darshan means literally to see. To see. So what, you know, what's the goal of philosophy? Maybe you remember or have read Prabhupada's discussion with Professor Durkheim, a German scholar. And Prabhupada was asking him, you know, what do you understand as the purpose of life? And he said, you know, to develop knowledge. And Prabhupada was countering by saying, knowledge for what purpose? And Durkheim was saying, no purpose, just knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada, you know, wouldn't budge from that point. No, there must be a purpose of knowledge. You know, so it's philosophy versus darshan. And it went around a few times, and Prabhupada finally got, like, you know, he got really heavy. And I can't remember the detail of how he said what he said, but he said something very strong, that, you know, that there must be a purpose. So for the Vedas in general, the purpose is to fulfill the mission of human existence. And what's that? It's self-realization. What's that? It's to understand who we are in relation to the Supreme Person. Darshan, seeing the Supreme Person face to face. Being with him and engaging in his loving service. We're not there yet, but that's the, whatever philosophy is there, described, that's like sambandhagyan, that says like what's what. And then there's a means to act within that relationship with Krishna, and then there's the goal. That's the Vedic picture of darshan. So same with Kapila Dev. It's, you know, to be face to face with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to get there, you have to, this purification, this contamination of wanting to be an enjoyer separately from Krishna, and then so the mind wanders to that instead of to the holy name when we're chanting the holy name, for example. You know, the tendency for engaging in fruitive activity. For what purpose? So we get something. For what purpose? So we can enjoy. I want to be an enjoyer. It's in the purport. It's natural for us to be an enjoyer. We're part and parcel, but there's a supreme enjoyer. And to enjoy in relation with the supreme enjoyer, that's the greatest happiness. But we're rebellious. And that rebelliousness, turning our face away from Krishna, Bahir Mukha Jeev, that's the root. And intelligent persons take the means. Sankirtan is the means. There's that nice verse in the Bhagavatam. Yajyai Sankirtana Prayayar Yajantihi Sumedasaha. Sumedasaha means, you know, they're intelligent. Sumeda. Those persons who are truly intelligent, they take up the Sankirtan process. But one can take up the Sankirtan process and do it for millions and millions and millions of lifetimes and not get the goal, darshan. There has to be the right intent when taking up the right means, and then applying yourself to the right means while taking up the process. But that's the objective of the Vedas, and that's the objective of the Bhagavatam. So having said that, here's another question. If you were to summarize the message of Srimad Bhagavatam in a simple phrase, this is an exercise, so I'd like you to think and offer some suggestions. If you were to offer philosophy on what is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, what would you say in a simple phrase? What's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? Any suggestions? Yeah. Or you say it a little differently. What's the message of Lord Chaitanya? What is the philosophy or the teaching that Lord Chaitanya provided? Because the teaching of Lord Chaitanya is the teaching of the Bhagavatam. The teaching of the Bhagavatam is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. They're the same.
The first thing that came to my mind was Krishna's Bhagavatam Swayam.
Yeah. Okay. That's fantastic. Just because of time is short. That's Krishna's position is the supreme. It's Mahavakya, the principal utterance of the whole Bhagavatam. But before getting to the point that that supreme person is Krishna, the source of everything is Krishna.
I'm just getting a thought like Jivanti Sanmukartam Bhavadivartam was the 10th candle. Jnane Prayasam Udupasinam Deva Jivanti Sanmukartam, living by the teaching, hearing from the devotees who are living by the standards of Bhagavatam.
Okay, that's the process. There's, you know, this is, we're speaking now sambandha before the process, and then there's, you know, we can say all kinds of nice things about the goal, reaching love of God, or entering into the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, or something. God is a person. And, that God is a person means, this is now Jiva Goswami, God is a person means that he has innumerable inconceivable potencies, shaktis. Because if you neuter God, he's impotent. That's not God. And if one can get that, God is a person with inconceivable potencies, then it opens the door for understanding God. It opens the door for devotional service. You know, for example, how can we engage in devotional service when we're living in this dark place called the material world? You know, it's a disconnect, because this is the dark place, and we're supposed to be engaged. So there's a connection between this, it's one of Krishna's potencies, and that is the philosophy that enables or empowers or supports devotional service. You know, like this thing that people ask all the time about balancing between material and spiritual. And my standard answer is the paradigm approach is wrong, because material is also connected to Krishna and spiritual is connected to Krishna and everything connected to Krishna. Just see the connection with Krishna. Now, you know, and then it makes it much easier to, quote, balance. You just live your life. You do time management. I spend this much time and this much time, but, you know, seeing the disconnect, you know, those that are working have children. They want their children to apply themselves in their academics, but they may feel, you know, like disconnected from the workplace because they don't like it and the way people are and stuff like that. But they want their kids to really study hard. And, you know, the whole program. So that they're studying whatever it is that they're doing has a relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, they're like split down the middle. There's, you know, there's life as a devotee when they're at home and at the temple, and then there's the life at school, and, you know, they're divided in half. They have two different identities. So that's not, you know, we're meant to be whole, not two different identities. We live in two different worlds. We're meant to see the association at work or at school is not the same as the association at the temple. We have at the temple, it's people that are doing things, but they want to go to Krishna. And when we go to school or to work, they don't want to go to Krishna. We just had a discussion yesterday amongst, you know, practically every day. Somebody saying, you know, the ethic at work is, you know, something that, if I'm honest with the employer, I'm not part of that, you know, value and that vision. And so, you know, I don't feel I belong here. But I have to continue doing something to take care of my responsibilities as a grihastha. Anyway, without going into all of that, there's a connection between all things and the source of emanation. But that source of emanation is a person that has unlimited potencies. Unlimited and inconceivable potencies. Bhagavan. So that's Bhagavat Purana is speaking about Bhagavan. And then the goal is darshan, or to be in a loving relationship with Bhagavan. And who that Bhagavan is Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna. So that the sequence of the sandarbhas, because Jiva Goswami is explaining the sandarbhas, explaining the Bhagavatam, right after explaining the means of knowing things, and the next sandarbha is Bhagavat sandarbha. God is a person with inconceivable potencies. The next one is Paramatma, how he deals with the material energy, with time and prakriti and the modes of nature, and second one. And then the fourth one is, that's Krishna. That's the Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. It's Krishna. Because other people that aren't Krishna Bhaktas, they can go through at least the first three sandarbhas and have the means to understand at least, you know, what the Bhagavatam is teaching without being Krishna Bhaktas. And then, it's not like keeping Krishna in a box and he comes out of a box, but it's laying the foundation for helping people understand the goal of life and the means to achieve it. And the means to achieve it is Bhakti Sandarbha, that's Sandarbha number 5, and then the goal is Priti Sandarbha, or Prema. Kapila, now back to this verse. Kapila Deva is presenting to Devahuti as the Yuga avatar, the means of achieving that destination. And in the verse, he's going to describe the process of yoga, because he's teaching meditation, because that's the Yuga Dharma, and how that connects with bhakti. It's not a disconnect. They connect. And perfection can be achieved by performing the process that he gives of meditation, provided it's meditation upon what? You know, and the purpose of that meditation upon what? Is to come to unmixed devotional service. That's what he's teaching. It's the title of the chapter. Explanation of devotional service. Even it's Satya Yuga and he's teaching meditation. You with me? Meditation for the sake of meditation, or knowledge for the sake of knowledge. Detachment and gaining mystic cities and whatever are the other things that may be motivations. Wanting liberation, moksha. Becoming, you know, recognized mystic, or getting adoration and followers and whatever else people wish when they have those aspirations. So let's go to the verse, text 39. It's already 8 o'clock and I haven't started the verse yet. The 35. My dear mother, O daughter of Manu, a devotee who applies the science of devotional service and mystic yoga in this way can achieve the abode of the Supreme Person simply by that devotional service. Now, in that way, we refer to the previous verse or the previous section, and it includes, you know, seeing Krishna and seeing other living entities and seeing material nature in a proper way. So here's the text 34. I'll read the translation. Such a perfect devotee offers respect to every living entity because he is under the firm conviction that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has entered the body of every living entity as the Supersoul or controller. And the previous verse to that is, they have no separate interest than the interest of Krishna. It's love. They have genuine love for Krishna, not just they're regulated by rules. They don't have an interest separate than the Supreme Lord, and that Supreme Lord is within every living entity, and therefore there's respect to every living entity. So a devotee who applies the science of devotional service this way, as previously described, can achieve the abode of the Supreme Person simply by that devotional service. Then I'm going to read the nice purport, 4 paragraphs. Herein the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Deva, perfectly explains that the mystic yoga system, consisting of the 8 different kinds of yoga activities, that's the Eightfold Yoga System, I mentioned all 8 of them, Yama, Niyama, etc., has to be performed with the aim of coming to the perfectional stage of bhakti yoga. Then the converse. It is not acceptable for one to be satisfied simply by practicing the sitting postures and thinking himself complete. By meditation, one must attain the stage of devotional service. As previously described, a yogi is advised to meditate on the form of Lord Vishnu from point to point, from the ankles to the legs, to the knees, to the thighs, to the chest, to the neck, and in this way gradually up to the face, and then to the ornaments. There's no question of impersonal meditation. Paragraph. When, by meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in all detail, one comes to the point of love of God That is the point of bhakti yoga. And at that point he must actually render service to the Lord out of transcendental love. Anyone who practices yoga and comes to the point of devotional service can attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his transcendental abode. Herein it is clearly stated, purusha, purusha vrajet. Note, it's the same word. Purusha is purusham. The living entity under unto the supreme living entity. The ending purusha, purusham is, you know, by Sanskrit it means to the supreme. The living entity to the supreme living entity. Purusham, purusha, purusham vrajet. The Purusha, the living entity, goes to the Supreme Person. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity are qualitatively one. They are both defined as Purusha. The quality of Purusha exists in both the Supreme Godhead and in the living entity. Purusha means, quote, enjoyer. And the spirit of enjoyment is present in both the living entity and the Supreme Lord. The difference is that the quantity of enjoyment is not equal. The living entity cannot experience the same quantity of enjoyment as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. An analogy may be made, very nice analogy, with a rich man and a poor man. The propensity for enjoyment is present in both, but the poor man cannot enjoy in the same quantity as the rich man. When the poor man dovetails his desires with those of the rich man, however, and when there's cooperation between the poor man and the rich man, or between the big and the small man, then the enjoyment is shared equally. That is like bhakti yoga. I'll come back. Prabhupada gives the example of the king and the servants of the king in the king's palace. The servants of the king in the king's palace, they also have regal attire. They enjoy the food in the palace of the king. They're enjoying like the king, although they're not the king, they're the servant of the king. But as long as they're not envious of the king, and they're happy to be in service to the king, they have a very high standard of enjoyment. It's a material example. Similarly, one who has the spirit in bhakti of wishing that Krishna becomes happy. Krishna enjoys. I mean, he doesn't need our little service for Krishna. But if we have that consciousness, we can enjoy on the level of Krishna's enjoyment. Although quantitatively it's small, qualitatively is the same. That's what's meant for us. Purusha, purusham vrajet, repeats it. When the living entity enters into the kingdom of God and cooperates with the Supreme Lord by giving him enjoyment, he enjoys the same facility or the same amount of pleasure as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we have the teaching from Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna considers the gopis are enjoying 10 million times more than me, and I'm the supreme enjoyer. What's going on here? I want that enjoyment. I'll try to get that enjoyment. I can't get that enjoyment. I have to take the position of the servant in order to get that enjoyment. So he became Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, in the mood of Radha to get that 10 million times greater enjoyment experience. Nice. Third paragraph. On the other hand, when the living entity wants to enjoy by imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his desire is called Maya. And it puts him in the material atmosphere. A living entity who wants to enjoy on his personal account and not cooperate with the Supreme Lord is engaged in materialistic life. As soon as he dovetails his enjoyment with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's engaged in spiritual life. An example may be cited here. The different limbs of the body cannot enjoy life independently. they must cooperate with the whole body and supply food to the stomach. In so doing, all the different parts of the body enjoy equally in cooperation with the whole body. That is the philosophy of achincha bheda bheda. Simultaneously, one and difference. Oneness and difference. The living entity cannot enjoy life in opposition to the Supreme Lord, semicolon. He has to dovetail his activities with the Lord by practicing bhakti yoga. And final paragraph. It is said herein that one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead by either the yoga process or the bhakti yoga process. This indicates that factually there is no difference between yoga and bhakti yoga because the target of both is Vishnu. In modern age, however, a yoga process has been manufactured which aims at something void and impersonal. Actually, yoga means meditation on the form of Lord Vishnu. If the yoga practice is actually performed according to the standard direction, there's no difference between yoga and bhakti yoga, as Kapila Deva's teaching explicitly in this and the previous chapter. The means of achieving perfection, the yoga system, including Sankhya, including meditation, it's all has an objective. Like using the metaphor of a ladder. What's the purpose of a ladder? To stand on the bottom rung? To get, you know, to the top rung. So you can get something that's, you know, that's higher than where you are standing. So the purpose of the ladder and the yoga system is to come to that stage. That's the objective. That's the discussion. Yes. Okay.
We often say that bhakti yoga is higher than dhyana yoga.
I'm listening.
Now, in this shloka, it clearly says there is no difference if it is performed according to the standards.
Yes.
Then why do we call bhakti yoga is higher than dhyana yoga? Is it that because we are in Kali Yuga, bhakti yoga is more that we can comprehend, like, you know, and practically possible? If that is the case, we should say that it is preferably better in this yuga, but how can we say that bhakti yoga is higher than
yoga? I got the question. A short reply is one leads to the other. If you're doing one nicely, it will lead to the other. And therefore they're non-different. If you're doing one nicely, it will lead to the other. The purpose of this one is that one. It's the immature stage. It's like, you know, a green mango and a ripe mango. They're both mango. One is unripe, another is ripe. Now, unripe mangoes, they have their use. It's one of the things you can offer to Krishna, green mangoes. And even from a medical or from a taste point of view, they're different. But they're both mango. So you can look at the difference and you can look at the sameness. Just it's an immature stage of. What do you think? Does that answer your question?
Supposing
someone is practicing not just Gyan, but Gyan Yoga. Supposing someone is doing that. If they are doing that with the understanding that the purpose of this is to get to the stage of bhakti, or if they're guided by a qualified person, that you know, somebody's like revved up about study, but you know, they understand the goal is somehow to connect with the Supreme. And that person who is the teacher understands this individual is like, you know, revved up with Gyan, but they really don't understand the goal. So they can teach that, but you know, as purification takes place, let them know or instruct them. The goal of this is that. Just like Kapila Deva is doing in chapter 26. He's teaching Sankhya. And impersonalists, they love Sankhya. Krishna just disappears. Material scientists, they like Sankhya too. Material scientists, they like Sankhya. They study it. Atheistic Sankhya. No Krishna. No goal. of... So if one does... The converse is, if one does this properly, it leads to that. And that's why the distinction, that it's higher. It's the mature stage of. There's an element of bhakti within cultivation of knowledge that entitles it to be called Gyan Yoga, but it done properly, it will lead to bhakti. Unmixed. It can, with proper guidance. Keep going. But...
in Jnana Yoga, my meditation mode is I'm meditating on Krishna.
No. In Jnana Yoga, I'm meditating on knowledge and searching for the Supreme. It's like Prabhupada would speak about Vedanta Society. You familiar? Vedanta Society?
I think what he's talking about Jnana Yoga.
Dhyana yoga.
Meditation. Okay. I thought you said Gyan Yoga. Dhyana Yoga. Okay. Okay, we'll switch channels. So we're doing Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga. So I'm a meditator on, I'm following the Dhyana Yoga process. So there must be, but I'm not really clear as a Dhyana Yoga practitioner. Now I read Bhagavad Gita and Krishna says, you know, fix your mind upon me, but I'm not there yet. To the degree that one becomes fixed upon Madgatain Antaratmana, chapter 6, that's the last verse of chapter 6. When one gets to that stage, mind and consciousness completely absorbed in Krishna, what do? You serve Krishna. That's the mature stage of Dhyan. So one is the immature, one the other is the mature. The green and the ripe mango.
But even in our bhakti yoga process, one of the processes is chanting, and that also...
No problem. Meditating. And there's an objective. I went through this, you know, a little vigorously. Not challengingly, but, you know, when we're doing our chanting, it's not just a behavior. Making a sound with our mouth dutifully. It's bring your consciousness to that sound vibration for a purpose, for, you know, for darshan, for being with Krishna. And as that intent, bringing the faculty of consciousness, the soul is both conscious and consciousness. That means we can be conscious, we're conscious, and we can be conscious of things around us. So bring consciousness to Krishna. And as we do that, then further purification, further illumination, and understanding something more about Krishna, and love for Krishna, the desire to serve Krishna, that's the mature stage in Dhyan. That's the mature stage. So they're the same, immature and mature. Is your son mature yet? He's becoming mature. But he's not yet mature, and he was really more immature before. But he's becoming mature, and as he matures, then he may come to the point of, you know, genuine devotion and then pure devotion. So pure devotion is the mature stage. Bhakti means unmixed. And when one is doing dhyan, there's a mix. And just by doing dhyan, it's not going to, there's not a necessity that you will reach purity, unmixed. But as the bhakti principle becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, then the unmixed position can be reached. And as you say, we're doing dhyan. It's mantra meditation. We're not at the samadhi stage yet, but we're practicing at least. Under the instruction and the guidance of scripture and guru and sadhu, that the purpose of that is to come to unmixed devotion unto Krishna. A dhyan yogi doesn't necessarily have that. What's their objective? Well, it's something else. It's liberation, moksha, or it's siddhis, or it's getting adoration from others? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, bhakti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale ashanta. So what's the fuel in the tank, or the inspiration, or the sankalpa of dhyan yogi? They want these other things. And they don't necessarily have somebody guiding them to say, you know, curb that tendency and replace it with something else. Attain unalloyed devotion. When dhyan is cultivated with that intent, then it can come to pure bhakti. Without it, it's not going to come to pure bhakti, and therefore pure bhakti is higher. Bhakti means unmixed. Jnana karma dhyanavatam. Anyabhilashita shunyam. That's the distinction. So they may look alike. There may be other people that are chanting. There are other people that are chanting. There are other people. Hare Krishna. There are other people that are chanting the Maha Mantra, and there are other people that are chanting other mantras. Lots of other mantras. It's getting really popular. I learned some of the Buddhist mantras when I was in China recently. I didn't memorize them, but I, you know, heard them from them. And they chant mantras. And they're doing dhyan. But it's not dhyan yoga. It's just dhyan. Like what Prabhupada is speaking here. Meditation on something impersonal. Or meditation on super soul. For what purpose? To get siddhis. Not to get bhakti. I'm going to the big guy because he can give me something I want. And you know, really what I want is to become the big guy. I want to become the enjoyer. Not bhakti. It's entrepreneurial. Do a business deal with the big guy. Second one.
My next question is, we often say that Krishna is the only Purusha and we are all to be meant to be enjoyed, and that's why we are doing the service. But in this sloka it says, you know, we are also quantitatively different, but as such, you know, we are also having that Purusha
character. Tendency.
Yeah.
For your very thoughtful questions. You don't just passively listen, you actively listen. It's a compliment. One way to respond to your question is, there are different ways of looking at the living entity, you know, one of the ways that Krishna speaks of the living entity is in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7. Aparayamitashtvanam prakritim vidime param. The living entity is called para prakriti. So that's one way of describing the living entity as para, transcendental nature. Distinct from matter that's not conscious, the living entity is conscious. And other features of consciousness. So that's a difference, a prakriti difference. Than the next verse, Krishna says, of these two, matter and spirit, I'm the source, they're under my control. So we're controlled, we're not the controller. We're prakriti, we're not purusha. That's one picture. Then there's another picture. It's not in contradiction, it's just another way of looking at the living entity. What's that? The living entity is actually spiritual. It's the para part of, the transcendental part of prakriti. What's the spiritual? We're, unlike matter, we're conscious. And we're tiny sparks of the Supreme, unlimited. So the qualities in the Supreme, unlimited, are found within the tiny drop of ocean has the qualities of the ocean, the spark has the qualities of the big fire. Qualitatively one. And therefore, that's another picture of looking at the living entity. There's qualitative oneness. And therefore, the tendency to want to enjoy is there in us because it's there in the supreme and fullness. These are part and parcel. Not the same as matter. Matter is connected to the supreme, but the living entity is in another category. Tatasta Shakti. So we're Shakti with the tendency to be an enjoyer. Purusha. So it's two different pictures. Different ways of perspectives of looking at the living entity. And they don't cancel each other. So the existentially, the problem lies when we don't see that we're the subordinate enjoyer to the supreme enjoyer. So wanting to be happy is not meant to be killed. That's Buddhism, nihilism. Get a dagger and just stab to death. This tendency to be Krishna's part and parcel. Make it nothing. It's not possible. It's an imagination. So our Bhagavat teaching is not nihilism. Our Bhagavat teaching is subordinate that tendency for enjoyment in a loving relationship with the supreme enjoyer. And that's the real happiness. And then we're enjoyers. We're purushas. As prakriti of the supreme. Like this, the Krishna's pondering. I can see that the gopis are experiencing happiness 10 million times greater than me. How is that? I'm the supreme enjoyer. But I can see they're enjoying 10 million, that's a lot, times more than me. I want that enjoyment. So, there's enjoyment. When we're properly aligned in the mood of loving service. And that's the position of prakriti in relation to purusha. Therein lies the enjoyment principle, enjoyment propensity. So it's two different ways of looking at the same thing. That happens all the time, two different ways of looking at the same thing. Something else?
Nobody has any question.
Let's see if there's somebody else has another question. Yes. We'll come back. Whoa.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I heard that even after chanting many lifetimes also one may not reach the final goal.
Yes.
Even under the guidance, we do all those things, but still there is a possibility of falling back to the material life.
Those are two different statements. Yes, go ahead.
So what is the reason that will happen?
What is the reason?
Yeah, falling back to the material.
That question was asked last night, but I don't mind answering it again. One of the biggest factors, there's several, my purpose, if I don't change the sense of purpose from one of the four that Krishna says, chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritanorjana, four types of pious people engaged in my devotional service. So I want. And there's four wants. And when those wants become fulfilled, what's the impetus to keep going? Thank you very much, Krishna. See you later. Fall back down to the. So, the converse is how to stay engaged in devotional services. The motivation that initially started us in devotional service, we have to reevaluate that motivation and adopt or accept or enter into another motivation, another purpose, another sankalpa, another intention. Another objective. The higher objective, life's ultimate purpose. For me, in my mission in life. If we don't do that, then it's easy to fall back down into the material pool. And then one of those four things starts to happen again, and we go, oh, I've got to go back to devotional service. But it's not so easy second time around, the third time around, and again and again. Unsteadiness in devotional service can be exhausting, as we all know. But so then, when faith is strong, then one can continue. And when faith is weak, then one can fall down. So one of the protections for faith is to associate with those that are faithful. The bundle of sticks, Aesop's Fables, bundle of sticks, you know that one? Yeah, so stay in association. Even I may not be so advanced in the realm of faith. Let me stay in close association without making offenses unto those who are strong in their faith. I may not be there, but in their association, there's safety from falling down. And here's another one. Prabhupada's statement of why a qualified person doesn't fall down is they pray to Krishna for protection from Maya because they know that Maya is very strong. They're not whimsical or overly risk-taking probably about his Western disciples. He said, you're very foolish. You like to flirt with Maya. How far out on the limb can I go before the limb breaks? And then you hear the limb cracking and you start running back for the trunk of the tree. That's what you do. Don't do that. That's very foolish. So one can fall into material existence by flirting with Maya. And there are different ways of doing that. There are some classic ones and there are some special custom ones. And just getting really close to the edge of something that's not okay. Maybe even occasionally indulging in that something that's not okay. Nothing happened. And then it becomes like a habit. And you're already in Maya. You may not have heard the limb crack, but you're in Maya. So one who wishes to not fall into Maya or fall again into material existence is very careful. Stay in the middle of the road. Who was driving when the car flipped? Were you driving slow or fast? Or in between? Was there some correlation between the speed that you were going, along with the weather conditions that brought about the car flipping? Probably.
It was
the weather. The weather, but then when there's weather, you take precaution, just like this discussion over here. When you're wishing to not fall into material existence, you proceed with caution. Green light, yellow flashing light. Didn't have those so much anymore, but yellow flashing light means slow down, proceed with caution. And, when around objects of the senses that one may have a tendency to be indulgent in, the yellow flashing light goes on. Or you just don't even go there. But if it's just circumstantially it happens that it's there, you withdraw from the situation or that you are super precaution. Yesterday in the snowstorm, some people just didn't come because they didn't want the risk. And so you wanted to come, a lesson is, I may get there late, but better I get there late than, upside down. Drive a little more slowly when it's weather conditions like that. Take more yellow flashing light precaution. Make sure you have good tires on your cars. That's one another lesson. We were following behind a called Premananda, about coming from the Buffalo Grove program to the Naperville program, and she said, "Well, do you have a van or a car?" I said, "We have a car." "Oh, we'll get a van." And as we were traveling behind a van. I mean, cargo van. And it was, the tail was going like this. It was much heavier than we are, but the traction was not the same. So it's not just heaviness. You have good tires in your car in Chicago in the winter. It may only snow like it did yesterday, not too many times, but take precaution. When dealing with the material energy, take precaution. We have to deal with the material energy. We live here. Take precaution. In Prabhupada's words, being sufficiently respectful of the power of Maya. Don't flirt with Maya. Don't take risky situations to see how far out you can go before the limb breaks. That mentality means you're at risk. Big time. Something else. Yes, Sibal. It's 8:30.
The explanation was very nice of one have to have that goal clearly, the goal of darshan. So the practices, our practices of devotional service are for the purpose of developing the natural love for Krishna.
Yes.
And Prabhupada explains that in the purport, that practice of bhakti means coming to the stage of love, practicing with love, and that's raga bhakti. And I've been reading about it to better understand. And one thing that I wanted to ask you is, there is this idea that there are certain practices that have been given traditionally in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition of the practices of Raga Bhakti. And there's a claim that maybe, what Prabhupada gave us was this mostly rules and regulations, Vaidhi Bhakti, and not so much of that. But, if you can talk a little bit about it, simple, because I know this is a very, difficult.
I don't know if this is the right forum for that discussion, but just a couple of editing remarks. Those that are more knowledgeable about this than I am, they put a big exclamation point behind the misunderstanding that there are practices as opposed to a natural state of internal consciousness. There are exhibitions of that internal consciousness, both internal, primarily internal, and not so much external. So the external doesn't so much change unless when that internal becomes really mature and there's a conflict between the internal and the external, then the external may be neglected as a consequence of the internal consciousness, and then moments later it's again exhibited, the external. So the sadhana exhibitions in Raga Bhakti don't change. And then now this particular, a comment is the particular language that you used of practices is not a practice like we're accustomed to thinking of practice in terms of sadhana bhakti. There's not exactly a sadhana. Rather, it's a consciousness that awakens and is cultivated. But it's a natural state of maturity. A natural state of maturity. that comes from proper sadhana, like what we were speaking about before, bringing your consciousness, the faculty of awareness, citta, to the name. And when that happens, in the right association, in the right mood of following qualified great devotees, that consciousness awakens, and then there's symptoms of cultivation that follow. One follows the other. And one last point is to go further into this raga marg, one requires mercy. Just like even to begin devotional service in the sadhana expression, it requires mercy, and this also requires mercy, and specifically mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through representatives of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who came to give Braja Prem. And the external part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's descent is Sankirtan movement. And the principal person, a principal person, or the principal person through whom he did that was Lord Nityananda. There's a Leela. My mother asked me to stay here in Puri. So can you don't come back to Puri, just to Lord Nityananda. Go all throughout the land. I'll give you associates to go with you and just do this Sankirtan, do this external. So one who gets through Lord Nityananda, he was distributing that Braja Prem. And those who assist Lord Nityananda get that mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the same mercy. So we do it in reverse. If you want the mercy of Radharani, if you want the mercy of Krishna, get the mercy of Radharani. You've heard this before, we all have. And to get the mercy of Radharani, you need the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. To get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you need the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Because Lord Nityananda can give you the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. How do you get the mercy? Assist him in the service that was assigned to him by Lord Chaitanya. Approach the Jagais and Madhais of this world. And give them Krishna Bhakti. And then you get Nityananda's mercy, by whose mercy you get Lord Chaitanya's mercy, by whose mercy you get Radharani's mercy, by whose mercy you get Krishna's mercy. So they go together. They're not like you graduate from Sankirtan to go into Raga Bhakti. And to illustrate that, last point, is something Vaisheshika Prabhu mentioned when he was here in August. The logo of the Gaudiya Math says across the top in Bengali, Raga Marg, and below it is a printing press. You know, the Brihat Mridanga. So there's a connection between Mridangas and the Brihat Mridangas, not like, you know, poo-poo on congregational chanting. But it's not the other way around. You know, the congregational chanters poo-poo the Brihat Mridanga or in any way diminish its importance. That was Bhaktisiddhanta's instruction to Srila Prabhupada. You get some resource, print books. Brihat Mridanga, heard all around the world. For the same purpose, that the mission. And the mission entitles one to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. You can't do the mission without the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Try to do the mission, you get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. You get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. You get Radharani's mercy. You get Radharani's mercy, you get Krishna's mercy. That's our Raga Marg. And it happens naturally if one applies oneself properly, both to the activity of distribution of printed literature and the proper consciousness when chanting the holy name. Same as this other discussion about dhyan. You know, what's the objective? Not to just to become a musical performer, an accomplished musical. I mean, I'm speaking in negative terms, but there are persons that don't have the right purpose in mind when they're doing congregational chanting. It becomes a performance, not... Anyway, so the internal meditation must be right. And, you know, those performances, ideally, bring them to the public. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu... They had kirtan at the house of Shiva Sangha, and then it became... Go outside the four walls of Shiva. Initially, it was just Brahmins only and pure devotees only. Then it was, take it out. Yeah. So, that's Raga Marg. It leads to it, if done properly. If, you know, with a proper understanding, proper guidance, and proper internal cultivation. One leads to the other, naturally. We don't need something else, another practice. It's just the right mango. Nigama kalpator galitam palam. You know, read Srimad Bhagavatam deeply. It is the ripened fruit. And it teaches the holy name. And how to enter into the holy. So it's, everything is there. You know, you need another practice. It's there. Okay. Two more questions. Your question, then her question. We're done.
So,
is this your son?
Yes, ma'am.
You're very peaceful. Yeah.
We know that yogis have some knowledge on Krishna. Then why still they want to do, go and do the yoga, and by suffering their body so much, in spite of doing devotional service? And also, I have a point in adding here, I'm remembering about Dhruv Maharaj.
Dhruva, yeah.
He went to do yoga for a material desire.
He sure did.
And after meeting Narada, and then Krishna came to see.
Yeah.
And then he found out that he was searching for some invaluable stones.
Yes, correct.
Rather than a valuable
gem. You've understood correctly.
So, so suppose if modern yogis are also doing and... doing the yoga by doing all these efforts, will Krishna come and meet them and realize, make them to realize, or they have to again come back to the material?
Say the punchline again, not the whole preamble, just what's the question that you'd like to hear addressed. Just the last part, say it again slowly and clearly.
Sure. So,
just the last part.
Yeah. Will Krishna come and realize the modern yogis?
When Krishna comes and sees the fallen yogis?
The modern yogis.
Modern yogis? Won't Krishna come and make the modern yogis realize? That's your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Well, he wants your help. He doesn't interfere. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't interfere with the free will of living entity. He gives them instruction, advice, and so forth. But he doesn't interfere. But he can you go interfere? We can be instruments, and not exactly to tell them, don't do that, but, do this along with that. Dovetail. You whatever it is? Just add, bhakti. And take some prashad of it, So that's our service as instruments of Krishna, because he doesn't interfere. Now, it's a way of interfering because he's engaging his representatives by giving them some service. But the free will of the living entity he doesn't interfere with. He doesn't make the free will to be used a different way. He's loving. Supposing your little boy, he wants to play more than, to his studies or whatever it is, or something like that. Supposing you want your boy to clean his room. And sometimes he cleans his room and sometimes he doesn't. So you go in and clean his room. Although you want him, say, Krishna doesn't interfere with the free will of the living entity. He'll encourage and instruct and send messages and messengers and, he'll nourish, but he doesn't interfere with free will. And we are supposed to be nourishers, like, distribute books. That's one way. And, thoughtfully, carefully, prudently give association. Not take, but give association. And so different ways. That's the Sankirtan. That's how he's doing it. And, let those yogis read the Bhaktivedanta purports and they get a club on their head. they may close the book, but then the light may go on. Yes, I'm... And it happens. Just a little anecdote and then we'll go to the last question. This is a few years ago. Have you been to Vrindavan? No. When you go to Vrindavan, you can remember this story. There's a lot of people, too many, that come to visit the temples in Vrindavan, including Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. And so our devotees have, using the term they use in India, book stalls. And as people come and go, it's not, right in their path, but it's very accessible. So this girl that likes to distribute books was attending one of those book stalls. And into the temple came one big yogi with a big long beard and a mat of hair that dragging on the ground behind him and a whole bunch of followers behind him. Because he was normally would reside in Himalayas, but when it was the winter time, there was too much snow, so he would come down and, his followers came with him. And so he was, visiting Vrindavan, and he came to the Krishna Balaram Mandir with his followers following behind him, going for darshan of the deity. And he saw the book stall and went over to the book table and looked at the books, looked at the Bhagavad Gita, put it back down, went in, and, darshan, and came back out with his followers falling behind him, and went over to the book table and asked how much the book was, and one of his followers bought the book. He came back to that book table alone a couple days later, a few days later, something like that. He spoke English, educated, and said to the girl, "I've been studying Bhagavad Gita my whole life, and I've been teaching Bhagavad Gita my whole life, but having read this Bhagavad Gita, I now understand that I've never understood Bhagavad Gita. And I've been misleading people. And I'd like to take these teachings and further propagate these teachings to others," whatever the language he was that he used. He was moved by the Bhaktivedanta purports. That's the Brihat Mridanga. So that's one of the ways that Krishna is intervening with misguided yogis, or, yogis that haven't just had the right association. Obviously, the man wasn't inimical. Otherwise, he wouldn't have responded the way they responded. But they just haven't had the right association. So he's giving through that. So you're part of the solution to that question that you asked. Not, the girl at the book table in Vrindavan, but we all have some opportunity to do that. People are misguided. It's the age of Kali. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya yupadrita. That's the age. And the solution is Bhagavatam, in propagating Bhagavat Dharma.
Thank you.
Maharaj, my question is from Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 3. In that text, it was glorifying Sukadeva Goswami's position to, you know, take the Vyasasana and give the lecture.
Yeah.
And in that context, in the purport, it's mentioned that at birth, no one is qualified materially.
There was mentioned that what?
In that context...
Don't say the whole thing. It was mentioned that...
At birth...
No one
is qualified material or spiritual sense. In the just previous line, Sukadeva Goswami, it is said that by birth he is liberated soul. So he is qualified to give the lecture.
No. He wasn't qualified because he was a Brahmavadi. He was qualified because he moved from the position of a Brahmavadi, a realized liberated soul, to a pure devotee through association by the process of hearing. It wasn't his birth qualification. It was his association with Vyas, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyas and assimilating and realizing its message. That was his qualification. Should I read it? Is that important for your question to know what it says here?
Yeah, that clears the... my understanding about...
You're clear now. Yay!
But we hear so many devotees by birth itself, like they are at a, like, you know, based on their previous life, they're starting their devotional life at a higher level.
So okay. What's the problem with that? They're just continuing where they left off. But they took birth again because they didn't complete. So now they're getting a chance to complete. What's the problem?
But the line says nobody's qualified at the birth.
But qualification by birth doesn't mean automatically. It does not mean that automatically you're going to engage in devotional service. Rather, in your next life, one will have the opportunity of association of devotees and then continue. We require the association of devotees at every stage of bhakti. Even in the highest stage, we require the association of devotees. So in the next life, it's not by previous birth of devotional service. Through the association of devotees, then, you know, that what was put on pause picks up again, left off. Let me ask you, the earlier, don't disclose anything embarrassing, but before you came in contact with devotees in this life, did you do things that devotees really shouldn't and wouldn't do? And so then that changed by devotional service, by association with devotees and resuming devotional service, and very quickly, at least some level of resuming what you were, where you were in your previous life, continued. But that doesn't qualify you for being, you know, Shukadeva Goswami. In his case, he had no material contact, no material affinity, but he didn't have bhakti until there was association with Vyas, speaking Bhagavatam. It's not by birth for you or for Shukadeva or anybody. Through association, mercy that comes through that association. Does that address it? Do I need to read this? We're okay. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.